I've been looking forward to this because I'm just thrilled. I remember Pastor Kenny, we had this conversation, whenever it was. It was a while ago, but he was at MST, we were talking, and Pastor Kenny told me that he was discerning about whether to come here and serve as senior pastor. And as soon as, I don't know why it was, but as soon as he mentioned it, I thought, that sounds like a wonderful opportunity and a wonderful fit for Pastor Kenny. So ever since that time, I've been so thrilled for him, but also for you, that Pastor Kenny has come to you. And it's a delight for me to be able to see him in his own context and also to be with you. So thank you for welcoming me. And my brief this morning and next week is to talk about missions. And it's wonderful to hear about the missionaries you support. And, you know, as I was preparing this message, I had this message prepared throughout all the week, and I was thinking about it. But then last night, there was something niggling at me, and I thought, I shouldn't speak on that. I should speak on something else. And so I changed the message about 11 o'clock last night. So I hope that this is the Spirit of God convicting me to share something with you that I hope will be helpful. And the title that I have is Mission in the Hands of Ordinary People. Because, you know, often when we see these wonderful missionaries, they're going through different challenges, it's difficult, but we mustn't forget that God has a part for us to play here. And in many ways, Christianity is declining here in Australia more than some of these other countries. We're seeing more Christians in some of these non-Western countries than we are here in Australia. So there's a role for us to play. And I want to turn us to turn to the book of Philippians to hear about two people who were very ordinary, but who God used greatly for his mission. And I hope that will encourage you. So we're in Philippians chapter 2, verses 19 to 30. And what I'll do, I'll just read the first part out for you. And then I'll read the second part when we get to that. So Philippians chapter 2, verses 19 to 24. This is the Apostle Paul. I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you soon, that I also may be cheered when I receive news about you. I have no one else like him who takes a genuine interest in your welfare. For everyone looks for his own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. But you know that Timothy has proved himself, because as a son with his father, he has served with me in the work of the gospel. I hope, therefore, to send him as soon as I see how things go with me. And I am confident in the Lord that I myself will come soon. You know, when we think about the challenges of mission in whether it's in Australia or in some of these other places that we've been looking at, one of the things that's always fascinated me is when you think about the early church, how it is that the early church, from being a very small group, a marginalized group, within two centuries overtook the whole Roman Empire and became the major religion. What happened? How did that happen? And there's a story that I like to tell about a scholar, a late sociologist, Christian sociologist, called Rodney Stark. And I like to tell this story because it highlights something about our own situation. Now, Rodney Stark was a Christian sociologist, but he served in a secular university. I think it was the University of Washington when he wrote this book, The Rise of Christianity. And he was trying to answer that question. How is it that Christians, from being a very small group, a very tiny group in a powerful Roman Empire, were able to overcome all of the persecutions and were able then to change the empire? Well, Rodney Stark, he basically was going to dig around And, you know, as a Christian scholar working in a secular context, he didn't want to use the Bible. Because as soon as he uses the Bible, people will say, well, you're biased. You know, you can't quote the Bible and tell us that this is the evidence. And so what he does, he goes into the other evidence, looks at some of the stories of the early church, and then he tries to look at what happened so that he can recount some of those stories. And so maybe he was trying to think about, well, is there some kind of ingenious kind of leadership advice that he could give, that Paul gave to other people? Was there some kind of special methodology that Paul adopted in order to do this, or the other apostles? And so what did he discover? Well, one of the things, as he was gathering these stories, he was compiling them, and one of the things he saw was how Christians were so different to the way that people lived in the Roman Empire. Just give you a couple of examples. So in the Greco-Roman era, in the early church, fathers of households could abandon children if it was a disabled child, or if the child was not the gender that they wanted. It was actually legal for fathers of households to abandon children, leave them on the side of the road to die. And they would not be penalized for that, or grabbed hold of and put in prison or anything like that. That was legal. But then what he found was that Christians would take these children, these babies left on the side of the road, and care for them as their own, because God adopted them as into his family, Christians into his family. So why should we not adopt these children and take care of them as we should? Very moving, very countercultural, very not expected, because as we'll see in Philippians, well, you just look after your own interests. It's going to be a hassle. Another story that is recounted was actually during one of their kind of pandemics. And standard practice, because they didn't have good sewage systems and good medical care as people have today, no vaccines, the standard practice for people was that if you had caught the disease, the standard practice was that the family should go and leave that house and leave that particular family member to go and die within their own home. And then the idea was that you come back after that, and then it's all safe when the person's died. That was standard practice. You flee, and then you come back, because no point you getting dying from the same thing. And what they found, what Rodney Stark found, was that there were Christians who did not leave the city. They did not leave the city, but they would come and care for these people. They would bring them water to drink and food to eat, even at the expense of their own lives. And often, these would be the neighbors who persecuted the Christians, but they would come and bring them water to drink and food to eat every day. And the thing is, what happens was that the families, after a period of time, would come back as they were supposed to, as was standard practice. And to their surprise, they would see that their family member's still alive. And they would say, what happened to you? Why are you still alive? And then sometimes, Rodney Stark would say, these Christians, one report was that these Christians said, well, even though, they would say to their family members, even though you abandoned me, it was these Christians. It was these Christians who came and gave me food to eat and water to drink every day. And you know what this led to? This led to these people who were cared for asking the question, why are you doing this? Why are you risking your own life to care for me? Why? What is it that you have that I do not have, right?
What is it that you have that I do not have? Why are you doing this? And the stories go on and on. They go on and on. But essentially, what Rodney Stark exposes in this book, Rise of Christianity, is that the reason why Christianity overran the Roman Empire was because Christians embraced this Jesus and lived in such a way that it was like Jesus. And that completely was so different to what people saw in the Roman Empire that people couldn't help but be attracted by that and become Christians. And so the way these Christians lived, not only in just what they said or believed or said they believed, but in how they lived is what made the difference. And, you know, I guess this is the question that stories like this raise and that we have to keep asking, you know, whether we think about mission here or mission overseas. We have to ask this question, does Christianity actually make any difference in our lives? You know, why are we coming to church? Why do we come here? Why do we call ourselves Christians? What role do we play? And does it go beyond even us coming to church? Does it make an impact on society? Does it make an impact on the people around us? What's our mission? Do we have a mission to impact the world for Christ, impact our society for Christ? Now, it's good for us to pause, I think, and think about that, just to reflect on that for a while in our own lives. And even as a church, aside from supporting missionaries, which is a great thing to do, what is our own mission? How do we impact this world that we live in? And in this passage that we're looking at today in Philippians, we're going to look at two people who were, in fact, very ordinary, but who made a massive impact for Jesus in Paul's mission to Philippi. And that's what I want us to look at today. So chapter 2, all that we're going to look at today is just these two characters, Timothy and Epaphroditus. And I just want to highlight a couple of things of them with you. So Paul is writing to the Philippians about these two people. And he could have chosen anybody, but he chooses these two people. And Paul is in prison at this time. And so they can't depend on him. This is the reason why it's very important for Paul to be talking about these other people. They can't rely on him anymore. If you ever thought that, the senior pastor or the missionaries are the ones who do all the evangelism and the preaching and the teaching and whatever else we do in this kind of term mission, Paul's in prison, so he can't do that. And so this is very significant. And so one of the things that Paul does is that he wants to tell us, that mission is not just for people like him. It's not just for people like the overseas missionary, but it's for ordinary people. And he highlights these two people, Timothy and Epaphroditus. And the way it goes is that if you remember, and we were singing about this morning, how Jesus came from the everlasting. He came near to us from the everlasting. And then he came to be in the world that we live in. And this is what Paul says in chapter 2. He talks about how Jesus, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but he made himself nothing. And you know, you've got to realize that at Philippi, this city, just like our city, people were self-centered. They're thinking about their own status. The greater status you have, the better. And basically, you look after your own interests in order to attain that status. And so Paul is saying to them, no, Jesus, who being in very nature God in the everlasting, he did not consider that equality something to be grasped, to be held onto at all costs. I'm going to achieve this, even if it means stepping over people. But he says, or stepping on people, I should say. But he said he made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant. And so, essentially, Paul reminds them of the gospel, and he says, this is the way that you should live. And in the church, he was beginning to notice things in the church where people were not serving in this way, not just for each other, but also in terms of their witness in the world. There were divisions in the church. And so when the outside world was looking into the church, they were saying, why are people fighting in the church? You know, I don't think I want to be a part of that group if that's what Christianity is. And we get that today when it talks about leadership failures, whether we talk about how Christians treat other people. And this is what Paul is addressing. He's saying, no, you need to humble yourself and be like Christ, because not just for yourselves as a church, but because of how that is seen by the world and your witness to the world. And so Paul wants to highlight Jesus' example in chapter 2, but then in chapter 3, later on in chapter 2, he talks about Timothy and Epaphroditus as people who live like that example, Jesus. And then in chapter 3, he talks about his own example, about how he tries to live as Jesus did. So you've got all these examples, Jesus, Timothy, Epaphroditus, and then Paul, trying to give us, and these are people that the congregation would have known, right? So you may even think about people in your in this church here who are, you think, are godly, Christ-like examples. And so after all of these examples, Paul says in chapter 3, verse 17, join with others in following my example, brothers, and take note of those who live according to the pattern we gave you. So in other words, he wants people to imitate Timothy, Epaphroditus, and himself, because they imitate Jesus. And by being like them, like Jesus, they will change the world in the way that they live. Okay? So let's have a quick look at Timothy. Because Timothy, I want to just highlight a few things just so that you know how, in a sense, ordinary he was. Because sometimes when people accompany people like Paul on missionary journeys, you may think this person must be a giant. But actually, in chapter 2, verse 19, Paul doesn't highlight that aspect particularly of Timothy and his life. He says here in chapter 2, verse 20, this is the point that he highlights. I have no one else like him who takes a genuine interest in your welfare. For everyone looks out for his own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. Now, it's very striking for me, and one of the things that you notice, let me just read on one more verse. When he talks about how Timothy does not look out for his own interest, but has a genuine interest, it says in verse 22, but you know that Timothy has proved himself, because as a son with his father, he has served with the work of the gospel. And that word serve is the same word that's used about Jesus in chapter 2 when he talks about Jesus as a servant. And that word servant is literally translated as slave. And when you talked about a slave in the New Testament, it means somebody's complete devotion, complete loyalty and devotion, in this case, to Jesus. And so what Paul is saying about Timothy is that he so served, was so consumed by wanting to serve the gospel and to serve Jesus, that there is no one like him in the sense that he takes a genuine interest in other people's welfare. And this is just such a basic thing, but how we need people who take a genuine interest, not just welcoming people and then forgetting about them, right? But a genuine interest in people's welfare, in the day-to-day things that we do, but taking a genuine interest in their lives. And this is what Paul wants people to know about Timothy. He doesn't mention Timothy's preaching. He doesn't mention Timothy's sort of big, you know, events maybe that he may have helped Paul with, or other things, more public things. But he just says, in this aspect, he is really like Jesus. Really, that I have no one, to the point where Paul says, I've got no one else like him, because everybody else looks to their own interests. of all the people available to be sent, and he could have chosen anybody, of all the people in all of his missionary journeys, he chooses Timothy for this reason. And we need to learn from this, brothers and sisters, a genuine interest in the welfare of the Philippians. And look, you know, there's quite a bit about Timothy in the Bible. And, you know, especially in 1 and 2 Timothy. But I just want to highlight this point just to encourage you. Because when we read those letters, we don't get the impression that Timothy is this kind of, you know, gung-ho kind of missionary going out there to change the world. In 1 Timothy, you know, we read not just about the fact that he's relatively young and perhaps maybe lacking in confidence to lead a new church. Not that he also has a recurring stomach illness. So he's a person who's plagued with weakness in his own life. But more than that, it's also important that Paul in 1 Timothy talks about Timothy's timidity. You know, if Timothy was alive today, you'd probably call him an introvert, all right? Because Paul is trying to say, you've got to fan into flame, you've got to, you know? But he's kind of like a bit timid. He has a spirit of timidity. And that is what makes it so amazing what Paul says about him here. Because he says he has a genuine interest in other people's welfare. If he's a bit of an introvert and he's thinking, should I talk to that person? Or should I not minister to this person? I'm not sure, that is he similar to me? All of these doubts he probably had. But Paul says what he excelled in was that he had a genuine interest in other people in spite of his timidity. And so I just want to encourage you today that if you do not think that you have the greatest people gifts in the world, you do not think you are the best, you're not an extrovert in any way, I want to encourage you from the example of Timothy that out of all the people that Paul could have sent, he sent Timothy in spite of being a timid person, a person who has a recurring stomach illness, and a person who was relatively young and maybe a little bit lacking in confidence. There was no one else like him. You know, quite a number of years ago now, when I was at Bible college, I remember doing something called college mission. And college mission meant that we had to, as a group of students, go away to a particular place for about a week together, and then we'll do some local mission. So in this case, we went to a local church, and the pastor said to us, okay, you guys have got to go to this neighborhood that the church is situated in, and you've got to knock on doors, different doors around the neighborhood, introduce yourself, and see if there are opportunities to invite them to the church, and also to maybe even share the gospel with them. And I just remember being in that group of students, and then there were a few of them like, I've never done door knocking before. I really don't want to do this. I feel really uncomfortable. Knocking on doors is just like, is it still done these days? I mean, it's just like, so people were getting really scared about this. And I just remember what the lecturer saying as the team leader and saying to the students, saying to all of us and saying, if your natural sinfulness tells you not to go and have a conversation with somebody, try to go one step beyond your natural sinfulness and speak to them. Go one step beyond your natural sinfulness to say hello, or to knock on that door, or to offer a glass of water, or whatever it may be. One step beyond your natural sinfulness. And so one of the pieces of advice, you know, this neighborhood was quite diverse with different kinds of people. And so if you're tempted not to speak to a person because that person's of a different color, or a different socioeconomic status, or just different to you, go one step beyond your natural sinfulness and reach out to them. Say hello to them. Draw alongside them. And the motivation here is because Timothy was served by Jesus, who did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but he came down from the everlasting, went to such great lengths to be with us, his enemies. And so can we not go to some lengths also to reach out to those who are different, go one step beyond our natural, our sinfulness? And so this is what Paul is encouraging the Philippians to do, to imitate Timothy in this respect, to go one step beyond. See, Timothy was not a get-rich-quick televangelist. Okay, he was serving Paul in the hard times, and he was as faithful in the hard times as he was in a spotlighted pulpit. Okay, Timothy was faithful. And so how we need to imitate Timothy in this genuine concern for other people. He was truly, in Paul's eyes and in God's eyes, a great one. He was a great one. He may not have been outwardly impressive, may have seemed insignificant in the eyes of many, but in God's eyes, he was a spiritual giant. And this is the kind of person that Paul wants us to imitate. Now, how about Epaphroditus? Epaphroditus, I'll go on to quickly. Epaphroditus, unlike Timothy, is only mentioned here in the Bible, but that doesn't make him less impressive. Epaphroditus has that same genuine interest in the welfare of the Philippians, but I want to highlight something in particular that Paul mentions twice. And in verse 27, Paul mentions this, and I'll read the whole passage to you from verse 25 to 30, but see if you can spot what he mentions twice. Paul says, "I think it is necessary to send back to you Epaphroditus, my brother, fellow worker and fellow soldier, who is also your messenger, whom you sent to take care of my needs. For he longs for all of you and is distressed because you heard he was ill. Indeed, he was ill and almost died. But God had mercy on him, and not him only, but also on me, to spare me sorrow upon sorrow. Therefore, I am all the more eager to send him, so that when you see him again, you may be glad, and I may have less anxiety. Welcome him in the Lord with great joy, and honor men like him, because he almost died for the work of Christ, risking his life to make up for the help you could not give me." I don't know if you spotted it, but if you look in verse 27 and verse 29, twice, Paul mentions how Epaphroditus, for this work of the gospel and this work of mission, almost died. Strange thing for us to hear sometimes when you read this in the Bible, because you think it's so far away from the world that we live. But I think what Paul is trying to say is that just as Jesus gave his life and died for us in chapter 2, Epaphroditus was like him, and that he was willing to go to the point and serve the gospel where he almost died. And we know that some people do die, even today, for the work of the gospel. But it was that mentality. It was the, how can I give my life to Christ? How can I serve him with everything that I have, even if it means some danger? Is there a willingness in my heart to be like Christ, even in this way? And it's so hard for us to hear and think about, because we don't hear it so very often. We hear about how to prosper in the Christian life, how God can be with us to bless us, but not always how God would call us to count the cost and to suffer for him in this life. But yet, this is such a part of the normal Christian life in the New Testament that when we read it, we don't feel that it's very common, but it's common in these pages. And more importantly, when Paul wants to highlight the people that we should emulate. This is the kind of people we should emulate, the people who are willing to give their lives for Christ. Now, as a young Christian, I remember talking to a senior Christian leader of a mission organization. He spoke all these different places and traveled different places. And I wanted to hear from him how he thought about this current generation. You know, he was in his 60s at the time. He's with the Lord now. But I just remember asking him the question that as he is engaged in missions, in his generation, certain things were happening. But as he looks at this current generation and the leaders coming up and the church in general, my question to him was, is there anything that concerns you? Within like a second, he said one word. And the one word was sacrifice. And he said to me that Christians today don't understand anymore the concept of sacrifice. Because our churches like talking about blessing and like talking. And that's fine. That's fine. We are blessed. We are richly blessed. But sometimes that blessing is different to the way that Jesus talked about blessing. You know, Jesus sometimes talks about blessing as being persecuted for his name. Blessed are you, Matthew chapter 5, verse 10 to 12, right? When people say all kinds of things about you because of me, right? That's blessing for Jesus. But we don't know when you talk about that blessing, right? Now, so this person then goes to tell me about this book that was written in 1936 by a guy called Howard Guinness. And it was called Sacrifice. And it basically talked about how Christians need to be those in their workplace, in their marriage life, in every area of their lives, to be prepared to make sacrifices for God's mission and to be like Christ in that way. And in the epilogue of that book, it basically challenges us, and it says, where are the young men and women of this generation who are able to sacrifice and make sacrifices for mission? Where are they? Where are they? Where are those who love Christ and his cross and embrace that so much that they want to live for Christ? And it was the book says it's a basic mark of any follower of Jesus Christ, because Jesus says, if anyone would come after me, he must take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life would lose it, and whoever loses his life for me and for the gospel will save it. Anyone would come after me, he must do these things. But we live in a generation, just like the Philippians at Philippi, that is profoundly self-centered. We're obsessed with self-fulfillment. We're obsessed with self-esteem. Christian bookshops have more books on self-help than they have on self-sacrifice. And we should be under no illusion that each of us here today will be tempted, as soon as we leave this room, just to live for ourselves rather than for Christ and the gospel. What's best for us rather than what's best for the gospel. And so in Epaphroditus, we see a man who is like that. The only thing longer than his name was probably the list of sacrifices that he made for Jesus, right? And he did this not only in the big events, but all kinds of small things. So that word, in verse 25, if you have your Bibles, it says here, Epaphroditus is also your messenger whom you sent to take care of my needs. That word is used to describe all kinds of service to meet people's needs. It's not just the upfront stuff. It's everything that we do for the sake of mission. And this is what Epaphroditus did. He was just like Jesus. Just as Jesus gave his life for us, then Epaphroditus risked his life for others as well. And so, brothers and sisters, I just want to encourage you. If you've thought about mission as just being overseas mission, And if you just thought about mission as something that only the Pauls of this world do, I want to encourage you from this passage today, and maybe this is why I changed it last night. I want to encourage you that mission is in the hands, always in the hands in the Bible, of ordinary people. People who are timid. People who are people who aren't that famous in the New Testament. Epaphroditus. People who are often forgotten. But Paul does not mention these big public figures. He doesn't start talking about Peter. He doesn't start talking about the other apostles. He talks about Timothy and Epaphroditus. Just ordinary people who wanted to be like Jesus where they are. Jesus served us in all of these ways. And, you know, living this way doesn't even depend on your gifts. You know, when you read through the book of Philippians, he doesn't mention your spiritual gifts. Doing these things that Timothy did and Epaphroditus did doesn't depend on your spiritual gifts. It just depends on a servant heart that is willing to serve and be like Christ and to be shaped by the cross of Christ. And when you do that, in God's sight, you are the truly great ones. Because Jesus, he humbled himself into the to become humiliated on that cross, but then was exalted to the right hand of God. And one day, those who are first will be last. Those who are last will be first. Those servants will be exalted. They are the truly great ones. And so I want to encourage you, as I encourage myself, to imitate Christ and to imitate others who are like this. Because when you do that, you can change the world, whether that's overseas or whether that's here. And these are great things, by the way, to be praying for your overseas missionaries. That more than the finances, more than the networking, more than all the human and financial resourcing that they can muster, that they would be like this, more than anything else, because this is what turns the world upside down. Amen? Amen. Let me pray.